You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, classic own goals, the return of Valencia, Bayern get Bayern, and Mu romances the Romans. Plus, Juve with a KO, a debut for Leo, and Real still pushing for Mbappe despite all the money that they owe. All that and more in this Totally Football Show, European edition, in association with Paddy Power. Hello, friend. It's Tuesday, the 31st of August. And yes, your Totally Euro crew are all here. President and correct Alvaro Romeo.
Hello.
Check. James Horncastle.
Check.
And Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
In the house. And a fresh back from Hull's, Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James and everyone.
Great to have you back, Rafa.
Great to be back.
And your enthusiasm levels are sky high after that well-earned rest. Good stuff. Looking
forward
to hearing about. Yep, good. And there's lots to look forward to from you, from the Bundesliga, from all the leagues. Jules, excited to be hearing about the sixth best league in Europe.
Yes.
Yes, because
who cares about coefficient? It's like your age. Do you care about your age? It's just a number.
That was a little reference, listener, to the fact that Monaco got eliminated by Shakhtar Donetsk from the Champions League preliminaries last week. And so only PSG and Lille will represent France in the group stages of that competition. So, yeah, the coefficient dropped to sixth behind Portugal. Crikey.
They were so unlucky.
Monaco.
They really were. I thought, Jules, didn't you? Like, how many chances Bin Yedder have?
Yeah, they had so many chances, so many shots on target. And Shakhtar had one shot. One goal and one deflected cross that ended up in the goal. I guess they all count. And like Roberto De Zerbi said after the game, all they had really was their heart and balls. And that counted. And that's how they went through. But yeah, I thought Monaco over the two legs was certainly the better team.
And no away rule, which was decisive in this tire.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that had still been in place, Niko Kovac's side would have gone through. But instead, they stay home. Anyway. Ligue 1, the only league with a six-time Ballon d'Or winner in it, though, eh? And on that note, let's have your moments of the weekend with Paddy Power, starting, Jules, with you.
It can only be Messi making his debut in Reims as well, the city of the French kings and coronations, and maybe the best place, really, outside of Paris to make his debut and for a new Ligue 1 king to be crowned.
Right. Great venue for Messi's first game with Paris Saint-Germain, and quite possibly Mbappe's last game with Paris Saint-Germain. I don't know, we'll talk about that very shortly. Alvaro, what's your moment of the weekend?
Well, it has to be the last seconds of Atletico Villarreal. The Yellow Submarine are leading 2-1 away at Wanda Metropolitano. Basically, they've got some seconds left to win the game. And Unai Emery himself is seconds away from beating Simeone for the first time in 15 attempts. All that was set to happen, and suddenly a long ball from Atletico de Madrid. Saúl sends a long ball. Mandy just clears it into his own net, and Atletico gets an equalizer in the last second of the game.
Everything seemed to be set for Villarreal to erect the arch of victory. But no, it was an extraordinary own goal. It wasn't the only extraordinary own goal that we had this weekend, Rafa?
Two beautiful own goals from Augsburg against Leverkusen, their 4-1 defeat. Both just amazing. One a little chip into an empty net and one a bullet header. Sadly the wrong net, but still beautiful.
What's your moment of the weekend though, Mr. Honigstein?
I think it's Erling Haaland scoring the last minute winner for Dortmund. It felt so important, not just for the 3 points, but the way that Dortmund seemed to have thrown this game away for the umpteenth time against a middling team. They conceded an equaliser in the 89th minute, and then the 90th minute, Haaland scored the winner.
Jetzt die Möglichkeit, wieder der Torwart, Moukoko nochmal der Torwart, und der Ball ist drin, der Ball ist drin, Erling Haaland in der 91. Minute.
Changed the whole dynamic about the international break, because another case of Dortmund dropping points, I think, would have been really awful as far as the mood was concerned. Now they won it. They should really address some of the issues at the back. It's been pretty poor from them, far too many goals conceded. But going forward, oh, it's just such a joy to see this team. And to see the finish from Haaland, it looks like an easy one because he's only about 5 meters out, but there's about three men between him and the goal, and he just manages to smash it into the roof. Perfect technique. Yeah, felt like a very big goal.
All right. Well, Mr. Horncastle, what about you?
Well, Ronaldo leaving. That was a small bit of news that came out last week. Don't know if you saw that. Juventus then losing their first home game in front of a crowd for 18 months against Empoli, who'd never beaten them in Turin. And so I think that has to be the moment. But I feel it's been eclipsed since then, James, since Sunday night in Salerno, where just when I thought I was out, Mu pulls me back in. I think it's Mu, the special one is back. The special one is back. It's happening. It's happening.
You know he's going to break your heart. In 3 months, he's going to break your heart.
And I know.
You know that.
I know in a few weeks' time, I'll be like, this was the worst decision Roma ever made. And yet, I'm all in right now. I'm on the Mu train. Let's bring it home.
On the train back to Rome with his Coca-Cola and his pizza, looking so smug on his face with his glasses. You know, it was so good.
I loved it.
Was so good.
Loved it.
Yep. So good. So good.
Magnificent stuff from Roma and their neighbours, Lazio. Another former Chelsea manager, Maurizio Sarri, there. Absolutely flying at the start of this Serie A season. We'll get to all of that soon enough. We're going to begin after this with Ligue 1.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend. Brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1-5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+,
Neymar remplacé par Léo Messi. Champagne pour la Ligue 1. Reims, la ville des sacres, accueille un roi du foot 19 jours après son arrivée à Paris. Messi joue enfin sous le maillot du Paris Saint-Germain. La soirée est tout simplement historique.
Yes, Lionel Messi has joué enfin 66 minutes into PSG's 2-0 win at Reims. On he trotted, looking, I don't know, was he a little bit embarrassed at all the attention? Do you think he was a bit nervous, maybe, Jules?
No, I don't think he was. I mean, they had cameras on him pretty much the whole day. Certainly, Reims had never seen so many fans outside an opposition hotel like the one outside the PSG hotel through the whole day. And then pretty much, I think, everybody in the stadium really wanted Messi to play, and even the Reims fans were chanting his name when he was about to come on. I mean, Ander Herrera made a really good joke on social media saying, I've never heard so many applause for me coming onto the pitch, when obviously it was for Messi, but they came on at the same time. I just thought it was fantastic. He didn't come out from the dressing room to warm up before the game, you know, when the Serbs do like little kippy-uppies or whatever. He stayed inside. At halftime, they all came out, but not him. He stayed inside as well. And then in that 66 minute, just a bit before, he came out and started warming up on the touchline and then came on. And obviously we looked at everything he did, and there's a few little moments of acceleration, keeping the ball, first touches, etc. Little pass and move and stuff like that. But it was amazing, I have to say.
What was your little heart doing, Jules, when you saw him finally there?
I was on
BT
Sport. I looked like an absolute idiot because I could not stop smiling. And I was just waiting. I was just trying in my head to think, okay, 60th minute, maybe 70th, I said on BT, maybe 65th. Just waiting, really. And then he came on. And it was just amazing. You know, I grew up watching this team with sometimes really average players, as we mentioned before, and to see the greatest of all time coming on is just incredible. I just can't wait now to be in the stadium when he plays after the international break.
Your smile, you look like Michael Gove or something. Sorry, Alvaro.
That's hard as
skin.
Come on.
That is... No. That's below the belt.
No, I was going to say, the game had some interest in Spain as well, for obvious reasons. It was Lionel Messi. And it had in total, I think, 4 million viewers, 2 million on Twitch, and another 2 million on Spanish TV. Mediaset showed the game for free. And, you know, the interest is still there. And it was quite interesting as well to see who was going to have more views. Either Ibai Llanos, a very famous Spanish streamer, the first Spanish guy who interviewed Messi in Paris when he signed for the club, or Mediaset, which is just a normal TV channel that you can find on Terrestrial. And they were quite even. I think Mediaset won by margin, you know. But it's interesting to see what the dynamics are as well, and how many people are watching football right now online on Twitch, which is not even a digital channel, you know. It's very interesting. And by the way, do you know who bought the rights of the Ligue 1 to watch those games on Twitch? Gerard Piqué's company.
Gerard Piqué?
Yep. Wow. His company bought the Davis Cup 2-3 years ago, the rights. He bought the Copa America this summer, and they show the Copa America on Twitch, and they bought the rights of Ligue 1. So, as you can see, I say that many times, Gerard Piqué is a tremendous entrepreneur. He's the guy who got the sponsor for Barcelona, Rakuten, 4 years ago, and he's still in the market, man, and he knows what he's doing.
Brilliant. Managed to beat off all the competition for the Twitch Ligue 1 rights. Fantastic. As I mentioned, Jules, there's a little bit of confusion still, despite PSG's denials, about Mbappe's future with the club. What's the latest on this Monday night as we record, Jules?
The latest is that Real Madrid have abandoned the negotiation with PSG. We know that one of the directors, let's put it out to make it simple, traveled to Paris today, and they didn't find an agreement. I still think this is a bit of a bluff, and there's still plenty of time if they really want to do that move, but it's been a big poker game between Real Madrid and PSG, and PSG still want more money. I think they would open the door only if there's more money. They're also working on a replacement, and all the guys that they want are really hard to do, so that's not helping. You know, let's say if they had a player lined up to replace Mbappe ready to come straight away, I think it would be easier to negotiate that move and to maybe let him go. But the fact as well that he's also happy to stay. And again, there's still enough time for him to leave. But the fact that it's not a usual Real Madrid pattern, if you want, because usually the players that they want and they push so far in the transfer window go to the clash with their clubs. We saw that with Modric, we saw that with Bale. With Mbappe, as much as they would love him to do the same, he doesn't want to do it. So it'd be very interesting next 24 hours. But right now, it looks like, certainly looks like when we record this, that he will be staying.
And he got both the goals in that 2-0 victory away at Reims.
Yeah, and this is a little bit silly, but in some Spanish papers and also in El Chiringuito, they were accusing Kylian Mbappé of not making a wink to Real Madrid or not saying that he wants to leave. Or I think that Mbappé, I don't know if he tweeted or he put on his Instagram on Sunday that it was like a perfect night for him after scoring 2 goals. And he got some critics from a certain part of the Spanish media too. But the truth is that Real Madrid has made the attempt now. And I don't think that this is over yet. There are still 24 hours to go. And Jules may tell us better, but this looks to me not like a normal signing, obviously, because this goes beyond the sports. I think that this is more like if Real Madrid manages to do it, it looks a little bit like, in a way, like a takeover bid, in the sense that this is a transformational signing for Real Madrid. And probably PSG wants also to show them that they are not going to sell a player, because this is strategical for PSG as well. It looks to me like this is not a normal transfer, it's something else. When PSG got Neymar, in fact, the power shifted from Barcelona to PSG. And I think that if PSG keeps Kylian Mbappé, they are going to even strengthen their power in world football.
But don't you think, Alvaro, that Real Madrid are also secretly hoping that they won't accept the bid? Because there's so much money for 9 months. Sign him next year.
Yeah, but Real Madrid needs Kylian Mbappé probably right now. That's the reason why they are doing the signing. And it's true that they are going to save a lot of money. But if they go for Mbappé in January, there will be probably more competition for the player. They will have to up the salary. That's a possibility as well. And the thing is that they think that this is the moment to try to get Kylian Mbappé. It's as simple as that. They sold plenty of academy assets that they could have stayed over the last 2 or 3 years, keeping Mbappé like the main target. Hakimi, Reguilón, Marcos Llorente, Martin Odegaard, all these players, they are raised in the academy or they were signed very early in their careers and they have become pretty much the trading coin or the trading currency to get Kylian Mbappé. So Real Madrid had this plotted for a long time now.
What needs to happen, Álvaro and Jules, for this to go through between now and Tuesday evening?
More money, I think.
But how much? What's...
I think, well, I was told 220 million euros. I think at 200 million, they let him go. I get what Álvaro is saying. I don't think you need him. You need him that badly that you're ready to spend 200 million on someone who is free in 6 months' time. I really don't. As much as amazing as he is, and he really is, I think he will go there in a year time. I think they cannot justify this on saying, but we're scared that if we don't sign him now, he can go to Liverpool in a year, or he can go to Manchester City or Barcelona or Juventus or wherever, because his dream is to play for Real Madrid. So he will go in a year time. The other fear might be that in between now and next year, he extends his deal in Paris. But he's been pretty clear that he's not going to do that. And also, for the listeners who don't really know Kylian Mbappé, he's one of the most stubborn guy, and so is his dad, by the way. So if he says to Paris now, I'm not going to extend, so either you find an agreement now with Madrid and you get some money, or I'm happy to stay but I will leave for nothing, he's not going to change his mind. Neymar can try as much as he wants, and Sergio Ramos and Messi and Kimpembe and any one of them, I don't think he will change his mind, and I don't think he will extend the contract. So I think it's only the money really is the key here, and if they find a replacement, because why would you let him go if you can't bring anyone in? And at the moment, right, they're struggling to find someone.
It makes no financial sense for Real Madrid to do this deal right now. It makes all the financial sense for Kylian Mbappe as well to do it next summer when he'll get the transfer fee. That's the signing on fee. Plus, he gets a year to play with Lionel Messi. He'll probably get a better chance to win the Champions League now than he will next year at Real Madrid. So do what you do with PSG this year and then move to Real Madrid.
Just the last thing. Florentino Pérez is going to unveil the new Santiago Bernabeu soon in September, and he wants to do it with Kylian Mbappé. That's number one. Number two, Real Madrid knows that they are closer to winning big titles with Mbappé than without him, and Real Madrid hasn't won a big title for more than 12 months now. That's unacceptable for Real Madrid. That's why they are going for Kylian Mbappé. They've got the money.
Well, we'll know by Tuesday evening, listener. So next up, let's get back to the football. We're off to Italy.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Ancora l'Empoli, è finita! Super sorpresa all'Allianz Stadium! Vince l'Empoli per 1-0!
Super sorpresa indeed! You can hear there the whistles are ringing out at the Allianz Stadium in Turin as Juve got their new post-Ronaldo era off to a rotten start. Losing 1-0, as James Horncastle mentioned earlier, to newly promoted Empoli. Well done, Empoli, eh? Huge for them.
Yeah, very much so. After taking the lead against Lazio last weekend and then losing 3-1, they lost their manager in the summer after he got them up from the second division, Alessio Dionisi, who went to Sassuolo to replace Roberto De Zerbi. And they really went for it against Juventus, particularly in the first half. Aurelio Andreazzoli said, I told the players before the game that I believe they could get something. I wasn't bluffing. Lovely build-up to the only goal of the game, even if they were quite fortunate that it came to Mancuso. Mancuso, who's one of those players who has kind of been moved around as part of those kind of plusvalenza kind of deals over the years without really settling. And
18 months on Juve's books.
Exactly. Made a name for himself in the second division, and this is, I think, his first goal in the top flight. And even though Juventus really piled it on in the final 20 minutes, They were well worth their win. I thought Vicario was more like a Sicario, James, in goal for them. Shooting down any shot that came his way. All credit to the Tuscans. Brilliant start to the second week of Serie A for them.
Right, but big questions for Allegri. He threw everybody at this one. They had Chiesa, Dybala, Morata, Kuzlewski, Manuel Locatelli was on as well. They're really struggling to create. There had been a lot of talk about them looking for players to replace Ronaldo. The word seemed to be that it was Moise Kean who's returning on loan from Everton. Is that definitive now?
Yeah, I mean, Kane was in Italy on Sunday night. I mean, he actually arrived. He touched down at Caselle shortly after full time. So he underwent a medical on Sunday. I think they will try and do another striker as well, although it will be very difficult at this juncture. Obviously, Ronaldo making that decision when he did not leave them with a lot of time between Friday and the end of the transfer window on Tuesday today. And I think they'll try and sign another midfield player as well, although that's very difficult. And the midfield has been a bugbear of Juventus fans for a long time, going back to the end of Allegri's first spell at the club. And you looked at the midfield he put together, at least his starting 11, with Danilo, who was playing as a kind of centre-back, right-back hybrid last year, did play some games in midfield. He was playing in front of the defence instead of the injured Aaron Ramsey. There was Rabiot, who just seems to stalk around like a giraffe. That's what Paolo Di Canio says when he's playing. I don't know if Julien agrees with that. And then Weston McKennie, who looked like he didn't know where he was playing and was hooked at half-time. And as you mentioned, they threw on all their most skillful technical players in the second half, but they didn't seem to have any presence in the penalty area. I thought that break that Chiesa made in the first half, where he kind of blitzed past five players and all of a sudden the kind of play opens up in front of him and there's no one there. I thought that was pretty indicative of Juventus' problems, James.
Is Pjanic coming back? Is that a possibility?
That's the answer. It's the answer.
Pjanic is always the answer.
I mean, we joke, but I do think Juventus have missed him in the last year. Certainly even last year under Pirlo, they didn't have a player like him. Arthur, who was part of that infamous swap, is always injured. That midfield needs upgrading. Locatelli is not enough, even though Juventus will not play the kind of possession-heavy football that Pirlo and Sarri tried to introduce. I think at this juncture, and it may change, that Pjanic will not be a Juventus player after the window. They're trying to sign these players from PSG. They want Paredes, for example, to bring back. They tried for Icardi, but Icardi's being held in standby just in case Mbappe goes to Real Madrid. So Juventus kind of, on the one hand, they were always looking for a striker after Ronaldo, but I think after how bad they were at the weekend, they're looking for a midfielder too.
Yeah, and the weekend before, of course, when they let that 2-0 lead slip away at Udinese, and their next game after international break, we'll see them heading down to Spalletti's Napoli, who are among the teams who are off to a cracking start. The other title contenders all scoring for fun, unlike Juve. Inter got 3, Milan got 4, Roma also got 4, Lazio got 6 this weekend. Anyway, we'll be checking in on those teams later on, because next up, let's hear about a bit of Bundesliga.
Ah, the summer was fun, wasn't it? No allegiances, everyone getting behind England, Three Lions being sung everywhere. But now the Premier League is back, get Grealish off the bench, he can stay on it at City. Pickford might have been a safe pair of hands, now he's just a pair. And enough of Jules Rimet dreaming, now it's our turn to dream. So kiss goodbye to that vomit-inducing unity and welcome back proper football. Let's celebrate flair on the grass, not a flare up the... Paddy Power! 18+, begambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Fun fact for you, Rafa. In the top European leagues that have played enough games, only three sides have a 100% winning record. You've got PSG, Spurs, and Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg, Rafa.
The mighty VfL Wolfsburg, yes.
Right. With that Mark van Bommel, managerial maestro. They've just beaten RB Leipzig this weekend. Tell us all about them.
Well, Wolfsburg, as you recall, James, had a really strong defence last year. Their top four finish was based on that, really. They had, of course, Wout Weghorst up front and Reid Lebakku playing really well, who's, I'm sure, going to be a mainstay for Germany now. But we didn't expect Mark van Bommel to continue necessarily in the same vein, because he wasn't necessarily known for being that kind of coach. We expected perhaps slightly more open far for Wolfsburg. But so far, they've been really just continuing what they did well last year. They were very gritty. They were very difficult to play against. Leipzig are a little bit undercooked at the moment. You could also see that. They really struggled. And the results are good. I'm not sure they're necessarily title contenders. I think there's still a huge gap between them and Dortmund and possibly Leipzig, when Leipzig playing to their full potential. But it hasn't come out of nothing, because this is the fourth best side from last season.
Going to be in the Champions League as well. They've drawn a very tasty looking group as well, with RB Salzburg and Sevilla.
Tasty, I think tasty, especially for those who will play them in the last 16, because this is the group that everyone wants to come up against. Real recognised powerhouse in there. But decent sides, as you said.
Mm. It's the first time that Wolfsburg have ever won their opening three matches in a Bundesliga season. A great start thus for Mark van Bommel. Not so much for Ted Lasso, a.k.a. Jesse Marsch of RB Leipzig.
No, he's struggling a bit. And I didn't expect it to happen that way, I must admit, because I felt that, yes, it would be a slightly transitional season, because you lose your two centre-backs. I mean, Konate didn't play that much, but certainly Upamecano was the guy at the back who held the thing together. You've just lost your captain, Marcel Sabitzer, who hasn't played so far because of injury and perhaps wasn't quite in the right frame of mind to play. And, of course, you lost the manager in Julian Nagelsmann.
Right.
But I felt that Jesse Marsch's motivational capabilities would actually push them quite far, aligned with the fact that, you know, they have the likes of Dominik Szoboszlai finally playing and one or two really interesting signings. But I think it takes a bit more time. And they certainly didn't look like their old self. And I think it's going to be tough for them, because the next game in the Bundesliga is Bayern.
Mm.
And then they've got Man City in the Champions League. If you struggle against Wolfsburg, you might have a hard time against those sides as well.
It's an interesting clash, that one, coming up after the international break with Bayern, because those three big departures, the captain, centre-back and the manager, they've all got one thing in common. It's our old friends Bayern Munich hoovering up anyone who dares get close to them in the title race.
Yeah, I mean, it does feed into the stereotype to a certain extent, because there's a kernel of truth in it that Bayern like to buy from the competition. I think two things are happening here. On the one hand, I don't think it was planned that way. You know, they signed Upamecano at a time when Flick was actually talking to him, trying to bring him on. If Flick doesn't go, Nagelsmann doesn't go. If Nagelsmann doesn't go, Sabitzer probably doesn't go. So I'm not sure this was quite sort of the strategic move to destroy Leipzig, as it perhaps was with Dortmund and Götze and Lewandowski. But of course, it does show you that the league is dysfunctional, because the second or third best team should not lose their main three protagonists, or three of their main three protagonists, to Bayern. Bayern are in a position where they can do that. Dortmund have kind of come to the point where they can isolate themselves as far as Bayern is concerned to a certain extent, but they still lose their best players. They won't lose them to Bayern, but their best players will still move on, whereas Bayern can still keep their best players a little bit longer. And then Bayern's advantage keeps growing, regardless of whether they buy the players or somebody else buys the players from their rivals. And it's not a good sign for the league. But for Bayern, it's a brilliant signing, because Sabitzer is the perfect complement to Goretzka and Kimmich. Can play as a 6, can play as an 8, can play as a 10, can play on the left, can play on the right. Super versatile, 27, you know, you've got the best sort of 3 or 4 years coming up for him. And he's played under Nagelsmann. And he's available for very little money. 15 million euros plus add-ons. Yes, of course, only 1 year left on his contract. But that's still a great deal. So you can't blame Bayern for doing the deal.
Meanwhile, Bayern beginning to click nicely under their manager Julian Nagelsmann, ex of Leipzig. 17 goals, Rafa, in their last two matches. This follows the midweek Pokal clash in which they put 12 goals past fifth-tier Bremer SV. Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting scoring four and assisting another three in that 12-0 win. And then this weekend, perhaps as impressively, they took on Hertha Berlin and beat them 5-0. Although I think they destroyed them last year as well, did they not, in the Bundesliga?
They did. I mean, Hertha, I don't know how impressive a big win against Hertha is these days, because Hertha are just as bad as they were last year. A team that have all the ambition, talk the talk about, you know, being a big club, doing this, doing that. And then you see them turn up and there's just absolutely no cohesion, no real idea of what they're trying to do. And all sorts of players that have been bought by different sporting directors. And it's just such a giant mess. But first to Bayern, yes, they were good. Yes, there are signs that things are beginning to click. Lewandowski had a great game, of course, scoring a hat-trick. Jamal Musiala was absolutely outstanding. Leroy Sané came on and played reasonably well. So, yeah, Bayern are very happy with themselves at the moment. But Hertha are in such trouble that Pal Dardai, the head coach, basically got the sense that he's no longer being backed by the hierarchy, because they tweeted some stuff about, you know, Hertha having to change, and the CEO came out saying we had tactical deficits and all this kind of stuff that you really do not want to hear as a manager, especially going to international break. And he said, well, you know, Hertha have been looking for this big manager, big coach for a long time now. I'm the little guy. I'm the nice guy. If they don't want me enough anymore, I'll go back to the under-16s. And it wasn't even said in anger. It was just kind of statement. You know, if you really don't want me, I go back to the under-16s. I don't care. So I think he might have his wish granted fairly soon. Oof. As Hertha trying to find the next guy that will make heads or tail of this messy squad that they have. Messy not in a good way,
the other kind. Yeah. Well, it's very much tails for them at the moment. They're down at the last place in the Bundesliga. As you mentioned, coming up after the international break, we have interesting games like the RB Leipzig-Bayern Munich match, but also Bayer Leverkusen against Dortmund, who we should touch on quickly. Leverkusen, you mentioned the extraordinary pair of own goals which paved the way for their success away at Augsburg. But the Dortmund result meantime, 3-2 at home to Hoffenheim. Interesting to see all three of their goal scorers born in England. But how big a result do you think was it for them, the fact that Haaland was able to snatch that winner in stoppage time?
Yes, huge result for them, because it would have been so frustrating to drop points again against a team that they really should beat, and they defended so poorly. Yes, they have some injury problems, and Axel Witsel is never going to be your best centre-back, and they were already low on pace without him playing there, and they were even more off the pace. Gregor Kobel in goal actually had a great game and made a real difference. I think with Bürki in goal, they might lose this game. But yeah, I mean, Haaland rescued them. There's just absolutely no doubt. I mean, Haaland gave them the 3 points. Haaland changed the whole debate. Haaland is the guy that makes things happen when Dortmund squander chances and are far too open at the back. So it just underlines the extraordinary importance. And I think they were quite happy, Dortmund, that the Kylian Mbappe deal has taken a lot longer to go through, or maybe not will go through at all, because there was a real worry about them at the end of last week that the money that PSG will receive will immediately be put on the table to tempt Dortmund. And I think they would have found it very, very hard to turn down a 200 million euro or so offer, because they are PLC, because they lost money last year, and because we know Erling Haaland will leave for 75 million euros next season when his release clause kicks in. So they're quite happy, I think, that this has been drawn out, and that it's not really too late to do this as far as Haaland.
They'll be eyeing the fax machine nervously between now and Tuesday night's deadline. All right. Fantastic stuff, Rafa. Thank you for that. Next up, should we have a quick word on last Thursday and Friday's Champions League and Europa League draws?
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Right. What about the Conference League? You haven't even mentioned that. Disgrace.
Yes, you're right, James Horncastle, the Conference League as well. What's your standout fixture? The draws that were made for the Conference League, what did you think?
There are no Spanish clubs in there, so...
No, not Spanish clubs in the Conference League? Crikey.
No, not at all, James, because Villarreal qualified for it, but then they won the Europa League and they went straight to the Champions League.
Champions League. And they're in a group with Man United and Atalanta and young boys with former Huddersfield manager David Wagner. Crikey. Yeah, so the draws, I mean, you've probably seen it was a while ago now. What caught your eye? Was it the fact that Inter and Real Madrid and Shakhtar are going to do it all over again, just like last year? Was it Liverpool coming up against Atletico Madrid? Was it a Moldovan side in the Champions League for the first time? What excites you most? Pick out one thing for us, Jules.
I like the City PSG retrouvaille, if you want, after the semi-final of last season. It would be good in the group stage and see quite early on those two teams sort of like looking at each other and maybe hoping to meet again later in the competition. But I like the fact that a lot of them who played recently against each other, you said the Inter, Shakhtar, Real Madrid, Atletico and Liverpool, of course, the last time Atletico won there, that they're just meeting each other and can get like a little revenge kind of thing.
All right. Alvaro.
Well, there are a couple of things. Sometimes we tend to say that the group of death is that one with the three very big teams. But in my case, I'm going for the group G. I think that Lille, Sevilla, Salzburg and Wolfsburg, they're going to have a hell of a battle to qualify. That's going to be pretty exciting. And then I really want to see what Atletico does in the Champions League. Seriously, they've got a very difficult group to start with. And they haven't won any more than two games in Europe over the last 12 months. Last season, they only managed to beat Salzburg. They didn't compete against Bayern at the Allianz Arena. They didn't compete against Chelsea either. So I think that this year examines again the power of Atletico outside the Spanish borders.
Okay. They have a terrific record against Liverpool, who are in that group with them. Liverpool only had one victory in their six meetings with Atletico Madrid in European competition. Also in that group, Porto and Milan, which is tremendously suggestive having the Rossoneri back in there, James. How competitive do you think they're going to be?
Well, I think they've got a better squad than they did last season. When they did quite well in the Europa League, they were eliminated by Manchester United, but they played very well at Old Trafford, particularly Frank Kessie that night. I think they've got experience up front in Giroud and Zlatan. We'll get to Giroud's performance at the weekend, maybe a little bit later. But I think it's a tricky group for all involved, really. I think that is... Alvaro mentioned the other one with Lille and Salzburg. That just feels like the classic Champions League group that happens every year, which kind of just... Everyone wants to play the winner or runner-up in the round of 16. And the winner of that tie ends up playing against, playing against the team from the other kind of slightly soft group. So yeah, I think that's probably one of the most difficult groups in the competition.
All right. Rafa, what did you make of the draw?
Really like the draw. I think I'm actually, in a strange way, more excited about the Europa League draw because
the groups are
really, really interesting there. Because just every group seems to be just exciting as far as the journeys are concerned, the fans, the matchups, so many storylines. If you look at the group with Marseille, Lazio, Gala and Lokomotiv Moscow, I mean, that is just, that's going to be amazing off the pitch as well as on it. I think the Champions League is decent. It doesn't strike you as... that difficult though for the better sides to go through. We don't really have a bona fide sort of group of death, which is a bit disappointing, I think. Even Leipzig, I think last year, you know, they might have created some problems for City and PSG. I think this year it probably will come short a little bit. So yeah, it'll still be fun. It'll still be fun to see Bayern play Barcelona and remind them of the result of when they met last time, for example. I'm just picking a random example here, of course, nothing to do with my personal sort of preferences or anything.
All right. Well, we'll be previewing, of course, those that first set of fixtures, which is coming up the midweek after the international break, right here soon enough on the Totally Football Show. Quick shout out for Turkish football, the Super League. Mario Balotelli's there now after his brilliant and hugely successful spells at Brescia and Monza in the Italian second division. He's playing for Adana Demirspor. Is it going well, James Horncastle?
I only saw his sideline tantrum, by the looks of it.
Right.
He didn't look particularly happy, poor Mario.
No, he's had three starts. They've had three games. He started them all. Hasn't scored. He was subbed off in this latest one. Their 1-1 draw with Konyaspor. This is Adana Demirspor he's playing for. And he was so upset that he punched the dugout and then punched the man sitting next to him as well and swore at the manager, who was, entirely coincidentally, apparently, fired the next day. Yes. Well, there you go. Loads more football to discuss. Where do you fancy heading next? Actually, we haven't heard from La Liga.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. With Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Think of it as your protection against Arsenal doing an Arsenal. And in the words of Jennifer Aniston, here comes the science bit. Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Max rebet is £10. Enhanced match odds are not included. Online exclusives only. T's and C's apply. And please be gambleaware.org.
Wow. Alvaro, you're right. It does sound pretty funny, that. Just to emphasise the point, it's the 95th minute and Emery's about to get his first ever win over Diego Simeone. Villarreal are about to beat the Spanish champions Atletico Madrid. And it's an innocuous enough ball. And just describe what happens again.
Well, basically, Mandy, the central defender of Villarreal, decides to head the ball to his goalkeeper, Jerónimo Rulli. But Rulli is not right there. The problem is that Rulli made the move. Yeah, exactly. Rulli was gone. So the ball, unfortunately for Mandy, went into his goal and it was a true all draw.
Yeah, I don't think Rulli thought Mandy was going to get to the ball. So he's gone across to basically get it from the other side of the field where he anticipates it arriving. But Mandy, in the meantime, has intercepted and headed it back to his own keeper, who's not there. And there's the magnificent way in which all the Villarreal players collapsed onto the turf simultaneously. It told a story. Anyway, there you go. Atletico dropping points for the first time this season. Sevilla, the other team who had made a perfect start, also dropping points. What else did we see? Well, Barcelona and Real both won. Barca beat Getafe 2-1. Real beat Real Betis 1-0. Danny Carvajal with a rather excellent winner set up by Karim Benzema. And Memphis Depay is off to a bit of a flyer with Barcelona, though.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, he's a player that has understood very quickly that there is a niche in there for him to sign after the departure of Lionel Messi. And he is up to the challenge, really. He scored a really good goal against Getafe, the second goal of Barcelona, after showing that he is very skillful and imaginative in the box as well, because he was able to find like a really tiny angle where to filter the ball through, and he scored one goal. He's been playing really well. His goal in Bilbao was fantastic as well. And, you know, maybe he is not the kind of player that he is going to have a continuity during the game or play the full 90 minutes really, really, really well. I think that he's a player of moments, but Barcelona needs a player like this at the minute, and he's up to the challenge. In fact, I think that he has been the best new of Barcelona this season so far, because any glimmer of improvement that we saw against in the first game of the season against Real Sociedad has vanished. I mean, against Athletic de Bilbao, Barcelona was below par. And against Getafe, maybe they deserve to win the game, but they couldn't control the ball for the last 20 or 30 minutes. And Barcelona normally do their gospel through the possession, you know. So I think that it was a little bit disappointing by Barcelona. And if I may single out Antoine Griezmann again, sorry for that, I have to do it, because I was checking his heat map of the game, and he spent more time in his own half than in the opposition's half. And this is the responsibility of himself, probably, but also the manager, because I think that with a better management, Antoine Griezmann would be in shooting positions more often.
Indeed. I read that Barca only had 7 shots in the game, which is their joint lowest total ever at the Camp Nou since Opta started recording this data in 2003-04. Is that just some numbers, Alvaro, or does that point to something quite worrying?
I think that it was one of the most disappointing games I've seen with Barcelona recently, which is a lot to say, really. The question is, when the players who are out injured and all that come back, will Barcelona improve? I think that they potentially will. Dembélé and hopefully Ansu Fati, fingers crossed, if he gets fit again and he looks like his past version of himself. If they come back, if Pedri starts playing again, he wasn't rested for this game because he had a really, really heavy summer with playing football, I think that Barcelona will improve. I'm pretty sure about that. But I still believe that they are a little bit soft in defense, especially any attack from the opponent ends up in a shot on Ter Stegen or Neto, whoever is in goal. They don't have the fortitude, really. They allow a lot of goal chances. And this is on Koeman's, really. I think that the manager should have sorted his defense by this time. And, you know, I think that it's still work in progress after a year. And this is very disappointing. As I said before, sometimes there are some evidences of improvement, but a second later you don't see them. So this is not good.
Okay, so early days. Anything else grab your attention from this weekend's action? Carlos Soler's goal in Valencia's 3-0 win of Alaves, perhaps?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Valencia in general. It's great to have them up there. You know, there are six teams on 7 points right now, one of them being Mallorca, by the way, who have really talented players. In Mallorca, they've got Kubo, they've got Canning Lee now, a former Valencia player from South Korea, who is supposed to be a promising talent. And Mallorca are doing very well at the beginning of the season, considering that they are newly promoted. You know, I wasn't expecting this. But Valencia, they got one of the best Spanish managers around. When you say Bordalás, you mean electricity, you mean voltage. It was an awakening for Valencia to have a manager like this. And some players, they are stepping up. Carlos Soler, he has become an all-round midfielder, to the point that Luis Enrique has capped him with Spain this time to play the international games. Gaya is a knife on the left wing. And I think that the team, they are doing a great effort all together. And they are, maybe they don't have the quality to qualify Valencia for the Champions League. I don't think so, you know. But I do believe that this Valencia at least is going to have some passion and some character. So I'm really happy that Valencia is back in La Liga and in their terms as well. You know, being that club that if you want to beat them, especially at Mestalla, you really have to fight and suffer.
Okay. That goal, by the way, lovely build-up, but it's finish. Extraordinary flick. No, I mean, it took me one or two replays to really understand what he'd done.
It was beautiful because it looked like he was going to head the ball and instead he just touched it with the external part of his foot, flying really, and he smashed it into the net. It was a beautiful goal.
Seek it out, listener, if you haven't already enjoyed it. All right, next up, let's catch up on the rest of Liga.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Boom. Lille got their first win of the season in Ligue 1, beating Montpellier 2-1. Monaco got their first win as well, also by a 2-1 scoreline. That was at Troyes, confusingly. Lyon, they got their first victory too. That was away at Nantes. First victory under Peter Bosch. Ooh, they're in Steven Gerrard's Rangers Europa League group. Hey, Jules.
Yeah, it's a tough group, actually, if you look at it. For the Marseille one that Rafa mentioned earlier, it's tough as well. And then you even have Rennes for the Europa Conference League to play Spurs too. So some good games coming up from the French clubs in Europe, but it's good for Bosch and, to be fair, for Kovac as well. And also Govenek at Lille to have their first win. It was not perfect, far from it. They could easily have drawn these games, but it would give them a bit of momentum. Bosch having new signing coming. We saw Shaqiri, I think Azmoun, the famous Iranian Messi from the Gold Show, should be coming. I would expect him. They're trying.
You'll have all the Messis.
You'll have all the Messis apart, you know, which would be really good. There's another one that James mentioned. Who was we mentioned last week? Another Messi from another country.
The Uzbek Messi. Shimura.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Messi.
You can't. Hands off.
Yeah, we can't have him just yet. And he would never come to our league, James, because as you know, he's the sixth best league in Europe.
Don't be too harsh on it. I'm sure you'll bounce back.
The only way is up anyway. But yeah, good for them to come back with a win, Lyon, and then at least they can look forward with a bit more peace and keep working. And Peter Bosch, as we know, because we've seen him in Germany, going forward is great, it's defensively the problem. So if he can sort that out, and the fact that he didn't concede a goal, although they conceded a lot of chances, would be in a way an improvement.
Okay. Now, last week there was all that trouble at Nice Marseille, and at the time the result had been, I guess, temporarily awarded to Nice. But I see that both teams have now got a game less on the standings. They're both with a game in hand. So what's the latest on that?
So there's a full investigation coming through. There's also some criminal part of it to do with some of the fans that came on and tried to fight the Marseille players, even with Jorge Sampaoli's assistant, Pablo Fernandez, who was the guy who punched the Nice Ultra. He's been suspended, you know, indefinitely. So he's in big trouble too. And then we will know, it'd be very interesting to see what happens to the two clubs, who wins, if there's a winner, and then maybe Nice will get points docked because of the crowd trouble. What happens to Payet? Could he be also banned because he threw the bottle back? And the big debate in France is players should not react, whatever the context and the situation. And a lot have said, yeah, but there's a point where it's too much. And that's why Payet threw the bottle back, or at least, you know, the two bottles back. It'd be very interesting. It's as we've been saying all along, they're in a pickle because they allowed the game to start again. And knowing that the Marseille players will not go back on the pitch. So if you give the win to Nice, it opens also of troubles. I think what will happen is that both clubs will have 0 points. Marseille can't have anything out of that game because they were losing and didn't want to play again. And Nice can't have the game won because of the crowd trouble from their own ultras. So I would expect a 0 point for both, and then long suspension for Sampaoli's assistant, a suspension for Payet. But we will know a bit more at the beginning of September.
Okay, interesting. In the meantime, Nice had to play behind closed doors this weekend as a result of that violence last week. It didn't seem to affect them very much. They beat Bordeaux 4-0. They're 5 points behind PSG with, as it stands, a game in hand. But by the sound of it, they're unlikely to get much chance to replay that fixture. Marseille, who were Nice's opponents in that game last week, also with a victory this week, 3-1 against Saint-Étienne, which is nice because Matteo Guendouzi became the first Arsenal player to score a league goal this season.
Yeah, exactly. And he took it well. Really good game. Again, so entertaining, this Marseille team with Sampaoli. They run so much. It's quite similar, of course, to Bielsa's Leeds in the Premier League. If you want another example, this is very similar, same formation and tactics and same intensity and effort and running. And they get exposed and they could easily have conceded more than one goal against Saint-Etienne. But also they're very fun to watch and score goals. And once Milik comes back from injury, for example, I think they would be even better. And once some of the players who are still new to the Sampaoli methods, I was going to say to the Bielsa method, but once they get a bit more used to it, I think they will be even stronger. And it's just finding the right balance, isn't it, between not attacking too much and still being able to defend. And then I think they, maybe of all the big teams that we mentioned, Lille and Monaco, Lyon, they're probably the one I would expect to be the closer to PSG through the season.
Really? Will Sampaoli get much time over the international break to work with his players, or are they all heading off to their respective national teams?
There's a few of them going out, but not as many as Kovac, for example, or even Bosch and Pochettino. So it would be good for them as long as he gives them a bit of a break, because at times against that Saint-Etienne team towards the end, they still looked, you could tell. I mean, they finished the games, they're completely exhausted. So I think they could do with a break.
You might need a break, listener, after all that. So let's take a very quick one and then finish off with all the goals that have been flying in around the rest of Serie A. That's right, we heard how Juve lost to Empoli, but the other title contenders had excellent results. Inter 3-1 at Verona, Napoli 2-1 at Genoa, Milan 4-1 against Cagliari with a brace from Olivier Giroud. Atalanta not so great, only 0-0 with Bologna, but Lazio, boom, 6-1 against Spezia. Thiago Motta's at Spezia, hat-trick from Ciro Immobile, meaning that Sarri, after all the two games, is top of the table thanks to a whopping goal difference. And across town at Roma, Mourinho's flying too. The last three results for Roma are a 3-1 win against Fiorentina, a 3-0 win over Trabzonspor, Super League leaders, and then this 4-0 here. So this is not what we were expecting from Mu.
Oh, James, he just feels like such a great fit right now. I mean, the second half performance against Salernitana, who I have told you in private, I think are probably the worst team to come up
ever.
In
you
quite
said
some
ever.
Time.
Yeah. Why do you think they're so bad, James?
Because I've seen their underlying numbers when they got promoted. They shouldn't have even been mid-table, Serie B, let alone second behind Empoli. And, you know, Fabrizio Castori, their manager, is particularly negative, although he does keep getting teams up, so credit to Fabrizio. But second half, oh my God, second goal. Please, go and search that out from Roma, from a lovely bit of interplay between Carlos Perez, someone who, you know, was loose change, lost down the back of the sofa. Roma didn't think they'd ever get rid of him, and yet he comes in, plays, does really well, puts the ball in. Tammy Abraham, Mkhitaryan through ball, Jordan Veretout on his way to play for France, scores again, brilliant. Tammy Abraham, great first goal for the club after a really good debut against Fiorentina. The team looks like, they were already very good players at Roma, but I think, dare I say, the business that they've done in the transfer window, it looks quite good as well. So, good vibes at the moment, James. Very, heady days right now. It is August.
Yeah, Tottenham fans, this is bringing back all sorts of memories for them of that amazing season they had last year when they won the league and everything.
Look, I am more than aware of what has happened to Mu, but he's in that mode at the moment where, you know, I mean, he was saying that he's at a club where there are real fans,
right?
And also real journalists. You ask him questions about tactics.
About tactics, yeah. So, what did he say?
He said, I love press conferences in Italy. Makes a change from England where they're all trying to stir up controversy and talk about crises, whereas here they want to talk about tactics. And I love talking about tactics, but I can't talk about them with you because you're journalists, something like that.
No, but he said, I can't talk about it with you because you're too good at it.
Too good. That was it. Too good.
Too
yes.
good at it. Yeah. That's why he never comes on this show.
So good.
Now, as honey moo as that is, what about Maurizio Sarri, who's making whoopee with Lazio? Are you amazed at how quickly he's managed to bring Sarri ball to Formello?
I am, because preseason didn't look like it was going great. They weren't lighting it up. Let's say there were no indications that they were going to play as well at the start of the season. He fell out with some of the fans in their preseason training camp who were kind of booing and whistling and insulting their backup striker, Fedat Muriqi. Obviously, he wanted them to sign this guy, Elsad Hissai from Napoli, and he's Albanian and was singing Bella Ciao as his initiation song, which did not go down well with the Lazio ultras because it's a partisan song. But he was singing it because he'd seen it in La Casa del Papel, no? And yet, you know, they've been brilliant. And also the club had all these problems because the owner kind of owns Salernitana and you're not allowed to own two clubs in the same league. And then Lazio had financial problems, which meant they couldn't sign anyone. And yet they played Sarri ball straight away. It's been bang. I mean, they've gone behind in both games. Okay, they've only played against Empoli and Spezia. So maybe it's too early. But, I mean, Immobile with that first half hat-trick, some really kind of tasty set pieces, throwback Sarri stuff. And then, they are old hat guys that, you know, I suppose sort of Prem boys would be saying, Felipe Anderson, Pedro, they can only do it in Serie A. But they kind of just work for Sarri because they're two ambidextrous players or ambipedal players. You never know who's on which side. And they already had a really good midfield with Luis Alberto and stuff. So, yeah, it's kind of exciting. It is Lazio.
He did have a good start with Chelsea as well. I guess, as you mentioned, the opponents have been of the easier variety. But the next game coming up for Lazio straight after the international break could be a test because they're away at San Siro against Milan, who are also looking really, really good, no? The 4-1 victory this weekend against Cagliari, the brace from Olivier Giroud on his home debut, also That Sandro Tonali free kick, if you're a young player who's getting tired of the comparisons with Andrea Pirlo, that's not the kind of free kick you want to be striking.
No, I mean, there's a great tweet which was put out, which was a side-by-side of Pirlo's first goal for Milan at San Siro, which is a free kick exactly the same as the one that Tonali scored. They're completely different players. They're not the same player. And Tonali, in some respects, is quite fortunate to still be at Milan after being very disappointing last year. Was actually sent back to Brescia. They renegotiated the terms to get him on a cheaper fee, even took a wage cut to come back to the club. But, you know, he has played okay in his first two games, and they're going to need him to play okay because Kessié and Bennacer will go away for the African Cup of Nations. But Milan were very good. I think Giroud is a perfect fit for them. Might give a headache for Stefano Pioli, because when Ibrahimovic is back, are they going to move away from the system that they've been playing for the last 18 months? Or is he going to try and get Giroud and Ibrahimovic to play together? Can they play together? But yeah, Leao was fantastic. You know, he's quite a frustrating player, but I thought he was very good in the first half. And Maignan as well, in their first game of the season against Samp. You know, no regrets for losing Donnarumma, even though he's man of the tournament of the Euros, and he's been on the bench ever since at PSG. But, I mean, I think Milan are, if anything, an example of the strength of Ligue 1, no? In terms of strength of players that have come out of France.
Surely not.
Maignan.
I don't think so.
Teo Hernandez.
No.
Olivier
no.
Giroud.
No.
Timu Bakayoko. Benacer early on.
Oh, stop it.
And their signings, Yassine Adli from Bordeaux, who's apparently a very good player who'll stay there for a year. And they might sign the kid from Brest, the number 10 winger, Romain Fevre. Exciting, exciting.
Mm, absolutely. By the way, if you're thinking Milan, Lazio, I'd love to see a bit of that. And that Napoli-Juve sounds really good as well. Great news is we'll be bringing you the big Sunday night clash when Serie A returns after international break. Live on BT Sport with all the goals from the weekend. That's me and James. The rest of you are welcome to pop along too, if you like. All right. We haven't mentioned Inter, so very quickly to say that they are continuing their excellent start under former Lazio manager Simone Inzaghi. They picked up former Lazio star Joaquin Correa last week as well. And barely a day after signing on for the Nerazzurri, he debuted against Verona and had quite the impact, James.
Yeah, came off the bench and scored a couple of goals. First, a towering header. He's taller than you think, is Correa. And then kind of trademark goal for his second. But, you know, was always an Inter fan. I think went to Appiano Gentile, the training ground, when he was a kid. It's got photos of him at San Siro in an Inter tracksuit with Javier Zanetti. Inter are fine. Inter look like they're able to replace, and they've had time to replace Romelu Lukaku in a way that Juventus haven't with Cristiano Ronaldo. And whether it's Dzeko or Lautaro, who came back and scored his first goal of the season, or it's Dzeko and Joaquin Correa, they seem better set right now than what's going on over in Turin.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting, isn't it? Very good. Next up, everybody, is the international break. So I do hope you enjoy that. A little palate cleanser before we crack on with the rest of this developing campaign across Europe. That brings us pretty much, I think, to the end, though, of today's Totally Football Show European edition. You have a super week, and we'll return soon enough. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.